The Coast Guard calls off the search for a fisherman lost near Hoonah. And arson is suspected in a recent Skagway fire. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. The Coast Guard suspended its search late Tuesday night for a crewman who went overboard from a fishing vessel near Hoonah. Alaska State Troopers identified the missing deckhand as 25-year-old Alan Young of Chehalis, Washington. The Coast Guard and other agencies searched more than 450 square miles on Tuesday. Petty Officer Sarah Francis says the search is now in the hands of the troopers. Young was one of two people aboard the fishing vessel Swift. Coast Guard Sector Juno received a call for help from another vessel, the Pacific Horizon, which found the Swift at anchor and abandoned. The Swift's skipper, 47-year-old Tim Lane of Sitka, went after Young in a skiff. He was later picked up on a nearby beach, suffering from mild hypothermia. The Skagway Assembly meets Thursday, where the group is expected to adopt its FY14 budget. Before the budget is adopted, the Assembly is expected to adopt an ordinance to help balance the budget. The ordinance increases the amount the Assembly can transfer from the sales tax fund to the general fund. Current allocation is capped at 1.5 mils. The ordinance would change that cap to allow up to 4.5 mils be transferred. The ordinance is meant to help cover costs in the FY14 general fund without raising the mill rate on property taxes. The Assembly has so far supported that change. The Assembly will also have a first reading of an ordinance that amends code to outline regulations for recreational vehicles and an ordinance to establish a solid waste advisory committee. The Assembly will also discuss issues with the U.S. Postal Service. Complaints about Postal Service in Skagway last summer prompted Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski to get involved and put pressure on the Postal Service for a solution. But again this summer, there are complaints of long lines, late mail, backlogged mail, and confusion. Mayor Stan Selmer said at recent meetings he's reached out to the Postal Service's Alaska District Manager. The Assembly is also scheduled to go into executive session to discuss lease negotiations with Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. The meeting is scheduled for Thursday at 7 p.m. in Assembly Chambers. The Alaska Redistricting Board is back at work, and communities are starting to weigh in with their preferences. Petersburg is again asking to be in a legislative district with Sitka and other small southeast communities. Petersburg's Borough Assembly voted recently to send a letter asking the Alaska Redistricting Board to go back to the electoral map it adopted in May of 2012, instead of the interim plan selected later that month. Joe Vicknicki reports.
Petersburg was unsuccessful in its original court challenge of the board's plan, putting Petersburg in a House district with Juneau for the 2012 election. However, the state Supreme Court ordered the board to come up with a new plan based on the state constitution in time for the 2014 election. In response, hearings are scheduled late this month and early next month on a new permanent plan. Petersburg elected officials are hoping the latest change will put the community back in a district with Sitka, Wrangell, and some other small panhandle communities. During a radio call-in show Monday, Assembly member Cindy Lagadakis supported that change.
I do think that we would benefit by being included with smaller communities. I think we have some similar interests and characteristics that make it more aligned with other small communities rather than being included with Juneau. Although I can't say that we've had any major problems in that regard thus far.
Petersburg's attorney Tom Klinkner this month drafted a letter to the board asking them to adopt Option A, as it's called, for Southeast Alaska. That option joins Petersburg with Sitka and Wrangell. The board adopted that plan back in May of 2012. However, the Supreme Court tossed it out that month following objections from Haines and Southeast Native organizations. The split court at the time was concerned with federal approval in time for last year's elections and ordered the board to put an interim plan in place and later revisit the Southeast districts. Mayor Pro Tem Sue Flint read from Klinkner's draft letter at a borough assembly meeting on Monday.
Option A remains the districting plan for Southeast that best meets the requirements of Article 6, Section 6 of the Alaska Constitution. The Voting Rights Act still provides no justification for deviating from Alaska constitutional requirements in Southeast Alaska, and there is ample time to obtain Department of Justice preclearance of a redistricting plan that includes Option A before the 2014 elections.
On the same radio call-in show that day, Assemblymember John Hoag said he was pleased with Petersburg's representation in the Juneau District last session and did not think there was a perfect solution for Southeast.
When you look at Option A, Prince of Wales gets cut in half with two districts, and I'm sure those residents don't think that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, they're going to end up doing what they do, and Option A is better for Petersburg, but it would be better if the district could include all of Prince of Wales, quite frankly, I would think.
The vote was unanimous to send the Option A letter onto the redistricting board. That group is holding work sessions this week to come up with new plans based on state constitutional requirements. Public hearings and plan presentations are scheduled in Anchorage June 28th, Fairbanks July 1st, and in Juneau July 2nd, with options for people to listen in and testify over the telephone. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
Construction-related blasting up at Ketchikan's Whitman Lake Hydroelectric Dam site triggered a landslide last weekend, taking out two pipes that supply water for the Whitman hatchery. KRBD's Lila Carey has more.
To keep you from worrying, the fish are okay. But it was touch and go there for a while.
The worst case scenario for a hatchery, we lost both pipelines.
That's Bill Gass, the production manager up at the Whitman Lake hatchery. He says the accident ended up cutting off all the water for the hatchery, and as one might imagine, water is kind of important to the business.
Water is everything to a fish, and you know, our normal operating capacity at this time of year would be about 9,000 to 10,000 gallons a minute flowing through the hatchery. Without a water supply, your hatchery is nothing. It's everything. It's the only thing.
Quick action, a lot of trips to haul water, and a long night spent clearing debris from the pipes save the vast majority of the developing salmon. Gas says they usually lose about 200 a day at the fry stage anyway, and the mishap might have increased that daily loss to 1,000. That's out of about 2.5 million.
These are kings and cohos, emergent fish from this year. There's about a million Chinook that will be 750,000 will be released at Whitman Lake, and another 250,000 go to Neats Bay.
And 1.4 million coho slated for release in various locations. Jenny Holstrom is the City of Ketchikan's project engineer for the Whitman Dam construction. She explained what happened after the mishap.
We immediately activated our contingency plan for that situation. We switched over to an emergency oxygen supply at the hatchery and began setting up a system of pumps and tanker trucks to deliver water.
She says Dawson and S&S contractors worked through the night Saturday to clear the debris and reach the pipeline. They replaced a section of one pipe, and it was operating within 24 hours after it had been severed. The second pipe still needs to be repaired, but the hatchery can operate on one in the meantime. Holstrom says many people contributed to keeping the hatchery operating.
It was a long, anxious night, but we were able to keep the fish and the raceways alive. And I am just so pleased at the outcome and the response of everybody who helped. Everybody just worked together and worked very hard to keep the hatchery going, and I'm very grateful and pleased.
Gass agrees that it was a stressful night and that many people contributed to keeping the fish alive.
I think the incident occurred at about 6 o'clock, 6:30 on a beautiful Saturday afternoon, and most of the staff was out barbecuing or doing whatever people do at this time, and people came in and spent the night on call, stringing hose and manning pumps and doing what we could down below while Dawson put the pipe back together up above. And it turned out well.
Holstrom says project officials learned a lot from the incident. While the contingency plan worked, they saved the fish after all, they will adjust it in case it's needed again. And that is a possibility.
Well, we do have more excavation and blasting to do. We're looking at the area again now, but due to the terrain, there's just no getting around it. We will review and refine our contingency plans based on our experience last weekend, but we'll just continue to move forward with the project.
So it's possible that this might happen again?
It's possible. We'll do everything we can to prevent it, but there's just no way to eliminate that risk entirely.
The hatchery at Whitman Lake opened in 1978 and is operated by the Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association. The long-planned Whitman Lake hydroelectric project has been on the city's radar since 1997, when that site was identified as the best opportunity to add power to Ketchikan's grid. After years of planning, the city came close to abandoning the project last fall because the construction bids came in at nearly double the estimate. After reducing the scope of the project, though, the city eventually opted to move forward with the nearly $17 million dam. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Special thanks to Lila Carey and Joe Vicnicki for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.